we're recording this before the 4th of July. It'll probably come out after the 4th of July, but the rodeo is coming up. Hearts on America Rodeo for the 4th of July.
Do you think other states put America after the small towns that they have?
Like, the ones that are good do.
Yeah, I think so. You know, you don't do that with the big cities in Oklahoma. Big being a relative term for cities in Oklahoma. We have a couple. I mean, regular. I mean, Tulsa's got over 1 million people. I don't know how many people are in Oklahoma City. Nobody, but people just don't care as much, right? Fine people down there, but just less cared about is the truth. Just kidding. But if you go to the small towns in America, take Copan, for example.
Okay.
Up by the north, you know, the Kansas border. It's not, nobody calls it Copan, Oklahoma. It's Copan, America.
Yeah. I agree.
And it feels right.
It does feel right. So Mutton Bustin' will be taking place.
For people who don't know, Adam, for people, I know like around here, everybody knows what that is. But for people who don't know what Mutton Bustin' is, will you give a description?
It is. It happens at the rodeo, and they take sheep and they put it in a corral, and then they put it in a run, and then they put screaming little kids on top of them.
A very small child.
And you threaten them because you've already paid for them to have this spot, and you threaten them to say, like, you're going to do this and you're going to have fun as they're screaming and kicking, and you place them on top of it, and you say, hold on as hard as you can, and they open the gate, and the sheep runs out, and the kid is bouncing up, you know, trying to hold on, and then they fall off.
It's like the children's version of bull riding. You know, it's,
but involuntary bull riding.
Well, it starts off voluntary, and then
ends.
Then they get down close to the animal, and they start to feel differently.
Not right.
Especially for your boys, you know, good.
It's good. No, and that doesn't always happen.
I've seen some kids who go and with determination.
And they jump on it.
And they have to be, you have to pry them off of that sheep. And they're the ones who win.
You know, years ago, Jude won.
Yeah, he was that way.
Yes. And Leo is absolutely going to be that way.
Yeah.
He was last year, or 2 years ago when he did it. And, you know, he was 2 years younger. So he's going to have one more shot at trying to get the title.
What's the age range?
7 is the highest. Okay. Yes. 7 and under. So this is probably going to be his last year. Oh no, he'll have one more year. He'll have one more year. One of his last years. And then Jude is acting like he wants to ride a mini bronc. So we'll see.
So we'll see.
We'll see. So that'll be a lot of fun. I love the rodeo.
The rodeo is excellent.
I love small town rodeos. They start off in prayer beforehand as a community, which I love. They sing the national anthem. You know,
that's the other thing. They do the pledge of the anthem.
It's just America. Americana manifested right before your eyes.
The way all things used to be.
Right.
Like all sporting events used to start this way.
There's just something about it. So I'm really excited.
I mean, in the 50s, people used to say the Pledge of Allegiance before dinner. I'm just kidding. I don't think they really did that. That would be
weird. Sounds a little communist.
It does sound.
By the way, guys.
All hail the supreme leader, the president.
Yeah. By the way, if you're listening from like New York, what is going on up there? What are you guys doing up there?
Nobody knows.
Like, get out.
So fast.
Get out.
If you love Jesus, you can come to Oklahoma.
That's right.
If you're so-so on Jesus, then Arkansas
is great for you.
You'll really love it there.
Yeah. Shout out to our Arkansas people.
All of our great fans in Arkansas. I feel like I'm really,
you're really
disinheriting
like
a lot of our fan base today. I should really pump the brakes.
We're taking on a new tactic on the Catholic Man Show. Just gonna sit here and
let me tell you what I think about people in Kansas.
My uneducated opinion.
Yeah.
Yes. So that we have that to look forward to. What's going on in your world?
Okay. So, great big news for the Diocese of Tulsa. We ordained a priest this last weekend. There is a man who exists.
He's been on the Catholic Man Show.
He's been in the Catholic Man Show. by the name of Robert Williams. He's now ontologically changed into Father Robert Williams, priest of God. So excited for him as a priest. Really, exceptional young man. Just kind of a natural leader.
Absolutely.
Got a lot of charisma. But we were there at the ordination. And, you know, then he was ordained, you know, the moment happened. And I looked at my son, David Jr., and I said, he's a priest now. And he looked at me and said, until he dies? And I was like, no, forever. Even in heaven, he'll be a priest.
By the order of Melchizedek.
Forever. He'll always be a priest. And he'll receive a special honor in heaven for being a priest. And he looked at me and said, well, I have to be a priest now. And I was like, well, you know, if, you know, that's what God wants
from
you.
I will be done.
Yeah. And so, but anyway, a few minutes go by and he starts weeping. This is my 5-year-old son. Just like weeping, sobbing. Didn't stop. All the rest of Mass, he was like just emotionally disturbed. Like something was disturbed. And I kept asking, like, are you okay? Are you sad? He's like, I'm not sad. Are you happy? He's like, I don't know. But when he started crying, I was asking him, like, hey, what's going on? You know, are you hurt? What happened? And he said, Dad, he's like crying, when I become a priest, I want you to be there. And I was like, oh, buddy. You know, it's like, now I'm trying not to cry. It's like, I will be. And then I was like, wait a second. Do you know something I don't know?
Yeah.
Why are you crying? What's up? What is going on? So anyway.
I wish you were going to be there, Dad, but you're not.
Yeah. Jesus just told me. When did he say I was going to die? Yeah. Like, how long do I have? Like, do I need to, like, go to confession right now? Like, anyway. Really, it was a very special moment. Our last bishop, Bishop Slattery, God rest his soul, this part of his story he told many times, he said he knew beyond the shadow of a doubt at 4 years old that he was called to the priesthood. He at four
knew it.
He just knew that he was going to be a priest. So it's certainly not unreasonable. And the thing is, like, if you're a good Catholic family, probably all of your 5-year-old boys say they want to be a priest, right. You know?
One thing that happened 9 years ago this month was we did the weirdest thing we've ever done on Catholic radio.
Well, if you qualify it that way, then yes. I was going to say, bro, this is not the weirdest thing we've ever done. We can't even talk about that kind of stuff. But on Catholic radio.
Right.
Really narrows the field a lot.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of candidates, actually.
We've been doing this for like 9 years.
Remember that one time we did live radio from a bicycle race?
Yes. Remember that one time where we ate the hottest chip in the world on Catholic radio?
Yeah, I do.
That was not smart. But we...
It was weird.
Yeah. We gave a play-by-play of the ordination of Bishop Condorla.
Yeah.
Which is like trying to, like, imagine like the Masters, but then trying the narration of the Masters and trying to bring that into an ordination where there's a lot of silence.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nothing going on.
But yeah, you've got the same golf voice, like, oh, okay. Yep. And he's walking up to the altar.
Moving with real intention now.
Yeah.
Hyper-focused. You can see he's looking up. You know, and we're just over there, and we're trying to fill in commentary when we're supposed to, but also leave, like, reverent silence. And anyway, it was really weird. Like, the idea was like, yes, this is going to be awesome. Until we started doing it. And
also,
like, yeah, that's weird.
Also, we had never done anything like that.
No.
And doing play-by-play, it's not just, like, something you can... It's
just
not easy
to
do, right?
In fact, try it out in your living room tomorrow night with all your kids and just try to narrate what's happening.
Sure. Especially in a situation where sometimes nothing is happening.
Right.
Like, they're standing there saying a prayer.
Right.
And they're still saying that one prayer.
And I'm not Joe Buck or Troy Aikman, right? I didn't do all of the prep work needed ahead of time trying to figure out what each you know, each priest and their backgrounds. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, I just,
but that was cool. It was very cool to do.
Yeah. That was like one of the first things that we did on Catholic Radio.
Yeah. I know. I was trying to think like if we even had a show, if that was even before.
I think we had a show.
Well, you said it was 9 years ago. Yeah, I don't know. It was right around the same time anyway.
Yeah. So that was kind of fun. Flashback of doing something interesting on Catholic Radio.
Yeah. Very cool.
So what are we talking about tonight?
We're going to be talking about spiritual idleness.
Oh, okay. Like idolizing things?
No.
Oh.
More of like sloth, spiritual laziness.
Oh, okay.
Laziness, that might be a good word.
Spiritual laziness.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's a very common, very prevalent thing. Even among people like who are, you know, pious. This kind of idleness is pernicious and sneaky. And there is no level, there's no level of the spiritual life that you will get to where you don't have to worry about it. You know, it's always something you have to be on your guard about.
It gets easier, though.
It does get easier. Well, it changes, the things to watch for.
I think the sneakiness does not, like...
The sneakiness does not get easier, yeah.
We'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world. Welcome back. You're listening to The Catholic Man Show with Adam Minahan and David Niles. We're sipping on a little scotch today. Single malt beverage from the Balvaney Distillery. This is their American Oak Sweet, the sweet toast of American Oak. It's 12-year. How would you describe it, Adam?
It's velvety in the mouth, full flavored, very smooth. Hint of vanilla and the char, it kicks into the very back, but it's not a strong alcohol burn.
Right. Yeah, real mellow. This is one, it's like if somebody's not I'm not a scotch drinker, this is a good one for them to sip on.
It's good.
Yeah, it's super good.
It's delicious.
It's super good, but it also is not going to offend
the senses.
It's going to be easy to drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to be pulling from a book that we talked from a couple weeks ago. It's called The Growth in Holiness, Progress of the Spiritual Life by Father Frederick Faber. Once again, he was, one of the things he did was, he wrote, what's the name of that hymn that he wrote? I'll think about it later. Anyway, was writing in the late 1800s. It's fun to read this book because he quotes a lot of other books that we have talked about here on the show. You know, like Father Abbott from the conferences,
Cashin?
Of Cashin, yeah.
Cashin. John Cashin?
Yeah. I was reading another chapter.
St. John Cashin?
Yeah, St. John Cashin. Another chapter today. And it's like, man, he was just quoting from, it's like, oh yeah, we've talked about that book on the show. We've talked about that book, you know?
Yeah, that is cool.
And it was very much, I felt like sort of reading one of the great books that are all in conversation with each other. This book feels very much like that with some of those great old spiritual writings, right? Mm-hmm. That really were foundational in the forming of Christian thought in the Western, you know, the West conceived of itself, right? So it's a great book. Highly recommend it. Cor Jesu Press.
Once again.
Go check them out. Everything so
we
far.
We ordered a bunch of books from them again this week. So
yeah, well, I mean, well, so far, everything we've got from them has just been awesome.
Yep.
So he talks about what he calls the seven developments of spiritual idleness. So these aren't necessarily in an order,
okay,
specific order, but these are just things that may happen. So we were kind of talking between the break about how no matter where you are in the spiritual life, idleness can sneak up on you, because anywhere that you lack vigilance, if you think about, you know, from a kind of a spiritual warfare perspective, any of the fronts that you stop being vigilant on, the devil will sneak up on you there, right? So it takes conscious effort, right? You're not going to be a saint on accident. Mm-hmm. You have to choose every day to say yes and continue these things. Now,
yeah, idleness is present when vigilance ceases to exist.
Right. So, you know, we did an episode a while back on watchfulness.
Mm-hmm. Types of watchfulness.
Yes. So that would be kind of the other side of the coin that we're going to be talking about today. You know, that was, you know, staying the positive of staying vigilant.
Right.
These are the consequences of
staying vigilant.
Not having that watchfulness.
Yeah, there's a great, I don't know if it's an essay. I wouldn't say an essay, but I think it was a letter by St. Hezekiah on watchfulness that I pulled from. I think it's out there somewhere. I wrote an article on the four types of watchfulness that he brings up. It's really, really good. Mm-hmm. That his writing and his insights.
Yeah. You know, I can see someone wondering, you know, why not just talk about watchfulness? Why would you spend time discussing and talking about the negatives side? Why do you, I mean, do you think we should be doing this? Or do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you model after Jesus talked more about hell than he did heaven in the Gospels.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
And I think also.
Checkmate?
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, when you talk about, hey, here are the consequences, here are those side effects, I think you're able to say, oh, man, I recognize that, you know, that, okay, I identify with that. That's what's going on with me. You know, it's sort of almost like a via negativa, the way, the road through the negative. And I do think it's helpful for us to sharpen our vision, our spiritual vision, so that we can see these signs early and... Boom. That's part of the watchfulness, is knowing what to watch for.
Yes. And partial love or not imperfect love is still love, is still charity. So if you are doing something out of fear of the consequences, I mean, that's what we do with children, right? When we're disciplining them, is that you cannot do this or you will get in trouble.
Right.
Right. And so they learn not to do this because they fear of getting in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then eventually when their reason is more developed and their intellect is more formed, they come to realize like, oh, I don't want to do this because to be obedient is to be good.
Right. You know, and out of love for my parents.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so like then the charity grows, but the imperfect love has to be there for it to flourish.
Right. Yeah, you're not going to just have perfect love from the beginning.
Unless you're mother.
Yeah. Gosh, man, I was thinking about her today in adoration and just about how young she was when Christ was born. She was just this, like, young girl.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's just, I know that's not new. It's right. Not new information, but it was just really hitting me hard today.
I get it.
So anyway.
So seven developments of spiritual idleness. So this is, we're going to, hey, be aware if this is something that you're doing.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first one he talks about is dissipation, which he says consists in putting things off beyond their proper times. so that one duty treads upon the heels of another, and all duties are felt as irksome obligations, a yoke beneath which we fret and lose our peace.
So I think this is the one that I struggle with the most.
I mean, who isn't this guy? You know, who does not?
Maybe not.
I mean, who doesn't procrastinate?
But it's not necessarily procrastinate. It's, hey, I'm gonna stay busy. I'm gonna keep doing things.
Oh, right, right.
But
putting less important things first, but, yeah. Right.
And it's like, oh, I don't want to do this because it's hard or it's inconvenient or mm-hmm. it's gonna cause pain. So I still have to do these other things too. So I'm gonna go do those other things first,
right?
You know, and get those out of the way, sure. And then come back. And
I also feel like I do this all the time. It's something that I try to be aware of. But sometimes I still, knowingly just like, I know, I'm still good. You know, anybody, I think especially for people who are, have a job that's self-paced, right? Where you're not being delegated tasks to do, you know, and it's up to you
and
to choose
also,
those things.
Maybe you have a side ministry or maybe like a deacon in the church. Maybe you have some other like calling that you have on mm-hmm. top of these other things. It's very easy to get them to blur the lines of like, oh, yeah, this one's important. My job is important. But also, this is important. I'm trying to save souls over here, you know, and you're like, so you put your ministry in front of the work or work in front. Like, it's very easy to blur those lines.
Why do you think that this dissipation, we're talking about like really choosing what tasks to do right. first. Why is this a spiritual problem?
Well, because the spiritual life is a hierarchy. And if you don't understand what, you have to judge everything according to their end, right? And so you judge whether it's good or bad according to their end.
Mm-hmm.
And including the spiritual life, including the virtuous life itself. What are we made for? What do we do in this life that we look back and say, this was a good life?
Yeah.
If you don't have the understanding of that there are hierarchies of goods, then I'm not sure how you can grow in the spiritual life.
Yeah, and I don't think I would make a distinction between the spiritual life and our life, our natural life, right? The things things you do at work,
I understand what you're saying, but...
Like, and there's a hierarchy there. No, yeah, absolutely. But also, it's like, look, your work, your vocation, this is part, it's actually part of your spiritual life. Everything you do, mm-hmm. you can't say,
yeah, because we're body, soul, composites.
Yeah, that's not, that's, that part of my day is not part of my spiritual life.
Nestorian? I think that's the...
Like Nestor from the Iliad?
Not him.
Different.
He is a great man.
Everybody knows.
He may have been
a Greek.
But he was a great man.
He was a wise.
Just ask
Greek.
Him.
Yeah.
But I do think that this is something that when you look at the end of the day and you feel like that you've been busy all day, but you don't look back on it and say, that was a good day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other day when I asked, other episode, I asked you like, have you thought about like what makes a good day for you?
Yeah.
Because you want to replicate those. Whatever it is that makes that day good, you want to replicate that as many times as you can before you die, right? That's what you want to try to do.
Sure.
And
definitely. Sure. Definitely.
So if you don't understand what makes a good day, you can work all the time. You can be busy all the time. And you look back, I don't feel at rest. I don't feel accomplished. Yeah. I don't feel like I moved the needle today, even though I was so busy. I was just chasing my tail the whole time.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's because the priorities aren't ordered properly.
Yeah, exactly. So he says that
Adam.
Our dissipation shows its power in multiplying our distractions at prayer or drawing us into an effeminate way of performing our duties and giving us a great distaste for penance.
Wow.
So what I love about this book, Father Faber just brings this down such a practical, it's like, oh, if you have a great distaste for penance, you know, like, well, here's something to look at.
Hmm.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're going to Italy in October. We'd love for you and your wife to come with us. There's still some spots available.
Or you and your friend. Or just you.
You and your mom and your dad.
Anybody.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Go to selectinternationaltours.com or give them a call and just say, hey, I want to go on the Catholic Mancho pilgrimage. They'll hook you up. They'll get you taken care of. But we're talking about the seven developments of spiritual idleness. The first one, dissipation. Like, this is, to me, as I'm looking through the list, I think this is the one that hits, like...
Yeah.
The other... There's some, you know, whatever it is, by the grace of God, obviously, by the grace of God, like, I don't struggle with as much. This is the one for me that I feel very exposed.
I do think it's... I don't think it's by accident he starts here. And I just want to close out dissipation with this quote... that he who is diligent will soon be cheerful. Because I think it also is a good segue to our next one. But just think about that. He who is diligent will soon be cheerful. I just think that's a wise thing to meditate on. I think there's a lot of natural and spiritual truth wrapped up in that short little line. But the next one is sadness and low spirits. Father Faber says, it's no uncommon thing for spiritual persons to speak of sadness as if it were some dignified interior trial, or as if it were something to call out pure sympathy, kindness, and commiseration. The soul of sadness is self-love.
Mm-hmm.
How many are there whose real end in the spiritual life is self-improvement rather than God?
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
I was like, oh man, that's it was heavy.
Yeah.
It's like we talk about virtue, we want to be virtuous. I want to be a virtuous person, right? And yeah, at the end of the day, am I orienting those goals and, you know, this spiritual exercise towards God, or am I orienting it towards improving myself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if I try to make the argument improving myself for God, but still, it's God now becomes the indirect goal and not the direct, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we also have to give ourselves grace, right? That we're not going to just all of a sudden go from 0 to 1 and be 100%. You know, to have this rich, deep spiritual life, that it's going to fall, that we're going to struggle with a lot of these things. And that's part of it, a growth in the spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you do have these low spirits or dissipation or sloth or, you know, the things that we're talking about, like, yeah, okay, acknowledge them, offer those up to our Lord and say, you know, purify these for my sanctity, and give ourselves grace that we're not going to be, you know, St. John Paul II immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially for people who have like a melancholic temperament. There are just some people out there who this is not really going to be, their temperament is not, doesn't lend itself towards this. But he says that the consequences of sadness are of the most fearful description. He says that nothing gives the devil so much power over us. He says that
sadness
gives the devil
sin.
Actually, he compares it. He talks about it compared to sin. I didn't put that quote in here, but he said some things that were like hyperbolic. But basically, that nothing gives the devil so much purchase over our souls
as
sadness. And there's something to that. I mean, obviously, mortal sin
is the worst.
There's nothing worse in the world than mortal sin. But sadness is a very literal hell on earth, right? That you are like experiencing a real incarnate hell to a degree, right? When you have that kind of sadness. So that's just something to watch out for, right? The next one is sloth. I didn't put any of the notes down for sloth because we've talked about sloth a lot.
I just didn't get around to it.
Let's do that later. There's a lot of similarities, I think, between dissipation and sloth.
Yeah.
But sloth, I think, is kind of the combination of this sadness, low spirits, and dissipation. It's really those things put together that when you have dissipation, it kind of gives you this low spirits, and you put those together and you end up with this sloth. Because just like what you were talking about with dissipation, slothful people aren't just lazy. They're not just sitting around doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But they not only get things in the wrong order, but it also brings about a hatred for what they do and for even existence itself. Right?
Yeah, they can. Sure. I mean, Pete, you know, at the beginning, dissipation talks about, like, you know, the loss of your peace. Well, what is peace? But Aquinas talks about how it's the tranquility of order.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to have this order in your life, this peace is tranquility of order. Well, if you don't have order in your life and be able to differentiate between higher goods and lower goods and what you should be doing, and you end up mixing those up, you don't feel as satisfied at the end of the day because you're not doing the thing in which you're made to do, which loses your peace because you look back and you're like, oh, I just didn't, I still feel riled up. I still don't feel at peace. I still, like, I can't rest right now because the work that you're doing isn't the work that you're called to do. Like, we work so that we can rest.
Right.
Right. And so, like, the rest actually doesn't come. It becomes like drudgery because we're not doing the work that we're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're, you know, moving the hierarchy of order of goods and creating disorder, which creates uneasiness.
Sure, sure. And all of these things that we're talking about will have grave impacts on your prayer life.
Are direct reflections of Adam Minahan.
This is a picture of him. Let me...
Right.
If you're blind,
you would know exactly what he looks like.
You know him so well.
Yeah.
But I just think that's important to remember that all of these things will have profound impacts on your prayer life specifically. It's not just, sure, your spiritual life, but you will struggle to pray if you are suffering from any of these types of idleness, which is sort of ironic because prayer itself is a type of idleness. It's a idleness that has that tranquility of order, right? Where we are, you know, wasting time with God. Of course, it's not actually wasting time, right? But there are just so many things in the spiritual life that are mimics
of the natural order.
Right, exactly. So you take something that objectively has so many similarities towards prayer, that thing which orients us towards the greatest good. Right.
One thing that I've been thinking about recently, and when I say recently, like only within this last month, is the things that I try to put off in the natural order of things, like either work or, you know, being a good father or husband, or the things that I am putting off to take on head on so that my prayer life, to prepare myself for a better prayer life, that I'm training myself to do these hard things because prayer is hard and prayer takes focus and concentration and it, you know, it's not easy to do. And sometimes you don't even want to do it. And to strengthen my will for prayer, I take on the natural things in my life head on to orient my will and like correct my will. And so that when those times come in my prayer life, which they seem to just be coming, you know, they're coming a lot more frequently.
Sure.
That I don't say, well, this holy hour is going to be 30 minutes. And then this 30 minutes is going to actually turn into 15.
Mm-hmm. I did a holy hour in 12 minutes today.
Right. Exactly. Or, you know, I just don't feel like fasting today. You know, this is self-inflicted fasting. I don't actually have to do it. I'm just not going to do it today.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very easy to do. And that's why the growth in your prayer life is so hard to see it sprout and take root and grow, because it happens so slowly. And the things that are difficult, that come upon you externally, that you have to combat, you don't realize that, oh, I've already trained my will to say no. I don't have to waste my energy and time to do it because I've already trained myself not to worry about that anymore.
Yeah. And it is so much harder today than in generations past because we have amplified our abilities so much through the use of technology, right? That we get, our focus is constantly distracted because on your phone, I look at my phone and in 5 seconds, I can actually accomplish something like communication, send an email, like I'm not, even if you're not just wasting time on your phone, right? You're really doing things. You're still, it's causing your focus to go here, 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 here. And what you're doing is just
fragmenting
your brain, and you're not training your focus to latch on to something because it's hard to do. Mm-hmm. Distraction is easy. Mm-hmm. It's hard to stay focused. That's one of those hard things that we have to consciously choose. Mm-hmm. So like, I really like, you know, there are some people who they say, I answer emails between, you know, for this 30 minutes in the morning and this 30 minutes in the afternoon, right? And like that, they don't look at their email. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that.
Oh, I absolutely.
Just for the human, just for, as a human life, yeah.
No, I don't disagree at all. I think that's accurate.
We're talking about the 7 developments of spiritual idleness by Father Faber. This is the Catholic Man Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. And David Niles.
Here with myself.
And we are totally great. We're talking about the 7 developments of the spirit of spiritual idleness by Father Faber from his book, Growth and Holiness, The Progress of the Spiritual Life. Definitely recommend getting it. The next we're on. Well, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. The bullets, man. This thing I use to type this up, it gets the numbers all weird. It's number 4. This one like really piqued my interest because he said that which may be called useless industry. And I was like, oh, tell me more. What industries do we get to rack? You know, like, let's bash on some industries. Here we go.
We've been bashing on people and land and territories. Now let's just do industries.
Let's do it.
Yeah, okay.
Who we tearing down, Faber? And then I realized what he meant by industry was something different. Oh, we're still talking about me. Okay. So he gave a number of examples. The one I picked from was... what he talked about of excessive communication. And I just thought that was hilarious.
In the 1800s.
Because, right, he says, in these days of cheap and rapid postage, we ought to be more jealous of our correspondence than we are. Is it too much to say that every letter we write is more or less a drain upon our spirituality? And if this be so, ought we not to make a rule to ourselves against unnecessary letter writing? Against the writing of any letter which either business or social propriety or affection does not render practically unavoidable. And it was like, whoa, bro. What would you have to say about text messaging?
Right.
You know?
Well, I remember when text messaging first came out, I was adamantly opposed to it when it first came out.
Yeah.
I was like, why when you should just like pick up the phone and call me?
Right.
What do you
realize that cost me 10 cents?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
it cost you 10 cents. It cost me 10 cents.
I mean, what if they still cost 10 cents? I think we would be more precise.
I wouldn't rapid fire text message. No. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I mean, I was opposed to text messaging when it first came out.
Uh-huh. I think that there are bigger problems that he's revealing here than we're willing to admit to ourselves.
I agree.
About what does it mean to communicate? Because actually the level of communication that we as a society have with, you know, like the amount of communication that you have with just other community members, people, strangers you don't know, but just who live in your town, mm-hmm. is so small, so low these days. Okay. One thing I was thinking about is the advent of self-driving cars.
Mm.
At this point, the most interaction I have with random people is the civility and politeness of driving with each other. Okay. You have to signal, you follow the rules. We're all doing this because it's, you know, and there's a polite way to drive and there's a rude way to drive, right? And you ought not to be, you know what I'm saying? Like actually the level of communication on the road, while all nonverbal, is fairly significant. It's significant.
Oh, it can get verbal.
It can get verbal. If it gets verbal, something has gone wrong. Okay, but, and you can imagine how when we went to driving, how much less, I mean, that was a big step back as far as how much communication, as opposed to riding on a horse or whatever people used to do, whatever ridiculous thing, you know, where you would have actually had real communication, even if someone was just passing you on the road, you could have like said, hello, you know, whatever. And now when we move to a realm of self-driving, the idea of like, that I might have to communicate with some strangers, like, why would I talk to you? Like, don't talk to me. Why are you talking to me? You know, it really just, I think it's going to create, I don't know, just more introverted, you know, more isolation.
Mm.
It's really, I think it's kind of a big deal. It's going to happen. Not going to stop it. It's just something that is going to happen. But I just think that our communication today is so, it's two things. It's flippant and too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's both too little and too much at the same time.
Yeah, that's logically contradicting, but that's fine.
Well, it's too much in its volume and too little in its meaning.
I was giving you a hard time.
Yeah.
But it's good clarification.
Yeah.
On the way back home, I was driving back from Texas this week, and I was watching or listening to old Johnny Carson interviews because I think that he was really good at interviewing people.
Sure.
Clearly he was. Mm-hmm. And I like to listen to him and see how he was interviewing people. He interviewed this old farmer from Iowa, and he was true farmer guy, overalls, you know, everything like that. And Johnny Carson was shocked that the man doesn't have a TV. Now, this is like in the 70s, you know, that he was interviewing. He's like, you don't have a TV? He's like, no, I don't have a phone. He's like, you don't have a phone? No. And he goes like, well, how do people get a hold of you?
How did we get you on the show today?
Right. And he goes, well, those who know me know where I live, and they're welcome there anytime. And it started, like, really made me think about just when you're talking about communication and the detriment of these natural cultural things that we have to be involved with that hone and tune and sharpen our communication skills with one another. When we take those things out of our lives, he made the point that, listen, I want real communication. I'm not interested in talking to you on the phone. If you can't make the time to come see me and talk to me, okay.
Yeah. Man, just think about that. You know, our buddy Juan, who used to, you know, the three of us all used to live within a square, like less than a mile.
From each other, yeah.
You know, now he lives kind of on the other side of town. If that's the level of communication, you know, we might never see him again.
Right.
You know, and that's that, you know, obviously there's something beautiful about the story you just told and that picture, you know, that, oh, people would just come and see him and that he would go and see people, right? And that you would just stop in. Like, I am afraid to just drop in on even my closest friends.
Right.
Now, speaking of our buddy Juan will drop in on anybody.
Yeah. You don't even have to be a close friend.
He might have just met you like last week.
Right.
And if he knows where you live and he's driving by, like
he
might just ring your doorbell.
Yeah.
And, you know,
show up with tamales.
And you know what? That's awesome. Like, it actually is great. Some people might be a little off put by like, I wasn't, look, the house isn't clean. Like, I didn't know you were coming over. You could have texted me first or something. Mm-hmm. Right. But, so there's something beautiful about that sort of, that like localness, right? Where if we're talking about communication, having a real common union,
right,
with people, a communion,
right.
And just what that means is that you're actually part of people's lives.
Right,
and it has to be with your neighbors, right? That you're at, these are the people, yeah, that you live with.
Right, because you're taking time out of your day to go over there, not knowing if he's there, not mm-hmm. knowing, you know, but you're still carving out that time. And then once you're there and he's there, you guys are spending time together.
Right.
And it's intentional. And again, it comes back to, I think that the phone is, we've been able to have flippant communication with one another.
Right.
Like you talk about, we were talking about earlier, like how everything is segmented and fragmented. And it's like, you talk about fragmented communication. It's just like, oh, I have to ask Dave that. I'm just fire off a text message and move on.
Yeah. And, later when I respond, it's like, wait, what was that about? You know, right, you have to go back to it.
Right.
Think about if you don't have a phone or a television, how important your neighbors become.
Mm-hmm.
Because for them, maybe they're the only people you have to talk to, like,
and
like how, on a frequent basis.
And how important it is to see others at Mass on Sundays.
Yeah.
Because that's where you're all going to be gathering together as a community to worship, and then commune with one another afterwards together.
Man, I think this might be a really good reason why evangelization has gotten what I think it's gotten harder over the years. Because if your neighbor, if you don't have a phone and your neighbors are the only people you have really to like talk to, and they don't have a phone and you're the only people, you know, now you like have to talk to your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And think about how much easier evangelization becomes in that setting. When if I can talk to whoever I want, if I have a phone, I don't have to talk to you. I'm going to talk to the people I like, you know, the people who agree with me on things like religion or politics, you know, mm-hmm. and it becomes so much easier to avoid having those like evangelical conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. A lot to think about there. He says some other stuff about letter writing.
It's a habit I've gotten out of. I used to intentionally write letters.
Dude, there is a house up the road from us that the day I moved into this house 2.5 years ago, I have been intending to write them a letter. It's just this beautiful white house on this hill, and they have all this like huge, beautiful, you know, pasture behind. Then their house sits so nicely on this hill, and it's just so picturesque. And every time I drive by this house, it's so beautiful, and I really love driving by it just to see the beauty. I have been intending to write them a letter for 2.5 years just to say how much I like driving by their house, and I still haven't done it.
It sounds slothful.
It sounds dissipant. Is that a word? Well, we've still got a couple other spiritual idleness developments we're going
to
talk about.
We'll get to them.
Someday. Check us out on the podcast.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Yeah, I have gotten out of the letter writing, though. That's frustrating.
And it's a cool thing to do.
I know.
Like, when you get a letter from someone, I can remember the last letter I got from somebody. It was from our buddy John, who entered the seminary at, is that his name? Gosh, it's been a long time.
Clearly, I thought you remembered.
Remember, he joined seminary at Notre Dame. He used to be in our Pint and Cross group. He was a young guy.
Oh, yeah, it's not John. It's,
yeah, him. Anyway, he wrote me a letter.
Peter
Paleo, yeah. He wrote me a letter. Also, he has gorgeous handwriting. I mean, when I like, it's like, yeah, bro, I'd be writing letters too if I could do letters like that. Those are nice letters.
Those are some nice letters.
Man, look at that. Look at that L.
I'm gonna eat a cheeseburger.
but a very cool thing to do, yeah, to write someone a letter. Okay. Number whatever.
Whatever leisure. Well, like, is leisure going to make an appearance here?
No, because these are the, we're talking about things that cause spiritual idleness.
Okay.
Leisure would be something that would cause spiritual progress, development. I don't know, whatever the opposite of idleness is in a productive way.
Okay, what's the next one then?
The next one is the not managing of our recreations well.
Oh, so leisure does make an appearance here.
Well, the opposite of leisure makes an appearance.
Yeah. Well, like, not doing leisure well.
Like I said.
I was trying to tee you up and you just did not take it.
Well, leisure's not in here. This is the opposite of leisure.
Okay.
Okay, so he says...
just not managing it well.
He says, you know, how do you know something is inappropriate, like rest, inappropriate attempts at, bad attempts at leisure? He says, leisure must be suited to our state in life, and no less so the particular point of advancement which we have reached in the spiritual life. So what he means by that are...
or is.
What he means by that is. Thank you. Gosh. There are some things that... I'm trying to think of a good example, like that's not the spiritual life. Okay. A monk who has...
candy.
Practiced. Monk does not have candy. A monk with candy is in a strange place. Very unique order he's professed with. Who has practiced a lot, this is part of his daily routine and vocation, might be able to sit for 3 hours in adoration. But for someone who, and that would be appropriate for his state in life.
Mm-hmm.
For me as a father, just the idea of taking 3 hours, like I'm going to go spend 3 hours in adoration, is actually disordered, right? And selfish is what it is. Because meanwhile, my wife is home trying to manage the household all by herself.
Right.
But leisure is something that we have, it's sometimes difficult to get right.
I think it's very difficult to get right.
What you're, Adam, this is like one of your big things. What are, like, what would you say are some of the requirements? How do you know if you're doing leisure well?
I think joy has a lot to do with it. That which brings joy and not happiness. I'm not talking about happiness, but I'm talking about joy.
Okay.
I think joy and leisure are tethered together. That rest comes or creates joy. That's what we, you know, we're joyful people. Alleluia is our song. We're Easter people. We're made for rest. We're made to rest in Him.
When you say rest, do you mean inactivity?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't mean inactivity. In fact, I can...
Not necessarily. It could be.
Not necessarily. It could be, but it could also be high activity.
Mm-hmm.
From a physical standpoint, if that's what you mean.
Playing football with the family. Or...
Right. It has to be... It can't be work. Meaning it can't be drudgery. It can't be something that you're like, oh, okay, now I got to go do right. leisure.
It shouldn't be compulsory.
And it's for its own end. Meaning that it's not like... You know, fasting is its own end. You know, like I'm not fasting or let me rephrase that. Fasting, I don't fast so that I can lose weight. You know, it's not like, oh, I need to lose weight, so I'm gonna start fasting from a spiritual standpoint, mm-hmm. so that I can lose weight. That's a disordered end that you're trying to achieve from fasting. If you're trying to achieve rest or leisure for the sake of something else, but actually to get something else out of it,
right?
Then you're not actually doing leisure well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I struggled with a lot when I was trying to take leisure intentionally, because I'd be like, okay, I'm going to read. I'm like, that's a great leisurely activity. I'm going to read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, I got to read. I got to read this. And then I got to get to this chapter. And I have to, and it's like, whoa, wait. I'm putting like all these parameters and stipulations and like
yeah.
qualifications.
And you might say like, well, I don't feel like reading because I have to.
Right,
because that's what I decided.
This is my leisurely activity.
No, but I'm going to leisure.
Right.
And so I'm going to read, even though I don't want to. I'd rather do something, you know, it's like, right. Well, I don't know. Maybe you ought to do something else, you know? Because leisure, there's like, it's similar to like being at play. There's something, mm-hmm. something at, you know,
and
where
it's
almost spontaneous. It should be, have some form of spontaneity.
And it has to have some sort of a contemplative aspect to it.
Yes. Right.
So, I mean, this is a wide answer, and I apologize.
No, it's good.
I wasn't expecting you to ask me this, but I think, so to summarize, I think that it's tethered to joy, that it's for its own end, that there has to be a contemplative aspect to it, and it's not work. I think those are some good stipulations.
Yeah.
To be a leisure, you know, have a leisure
off the cuff. I appreciate. Good answer. Okay, so the last one is a general indifference about the use of our time. So right off the surface, it's like, well, this feels a lot like what we've talked about already about dissipation. But dissipation was about putting things in the, like doing things in the wrong order. Now, you kind of end up wasting time. Dissipation ends up wasting time.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
What is the difference between the general indifference about the use of time, mm-hmm. and holy indifference?
Holy indifference is that's something different. Holy indifference is where you have reached a level of spiritual maturity in preferring God's will to all things, where whether I am given trials or comforts, difficulties or you know, success, that all I care about is I rejoice in both equally, because both I recognize as the Lord's will for my life. And so his will is what I actually desire. And so when I'm given given stormy seas, say God be praised. When I'm given an easy road, I say God be praised. But I do not prefer one to the other, because I only prefer that which I prefer is God's will. Okay. And I readily admit and see that all of those things that are given to me are his will.
And so how does that differ from the indifference of the use of our time?
So I think what he's talking about here is when we use our time, when we kind of waste time.
Flippantly.
Yeah. I love this line, what he says here. So he says, we have to remember that time is the stuff out of which eternity is made. That it is at once precious and irrevocable, that we shall have to give the strictest account of it at the last.
Mm.
When I read stuff like that, it gives me a little bit of terror, yeah. Right?
Make me kind of clench up a little bit.
I'm actually these kinds of thing, and I'm actually afraid to hear stuff like that because of all the time.
No one will credit how strong the habit of losing time will rapidly become.
Right. Yeah.
I'm looking at you, YouTube Reels,
dude.
Shorts,
bro.
Actually, YouTube Shorts, but
whatever they are, they're all the same.
Yeah,
so addictive. Well, let me just find one more good one, and then I'll be done. It's like, well, that was that was okay, but I'm just going to find one more good one,
dude.
And gosh, dude, but just all the time I've wasted throughout my it will be a very painful. At my judgment, when we get to that section. Of the book or whatever it is, the movie, I don't know. That's going to be a bad section to go through. Because unlike other sins, you know, like sins of the flesh, where, you know, you're pursuing a natural pleasure or something, right? Wasting time is just stupid, right? It's just like, why did you do that? I don't know. I don't know.
I actually didn't want to do it. Yeah. I didn't like doing it.
Yeah.
And I did it.
Yeah. I just...
That's a C.S. Lewis... That's like something that I think is in Screwtape Letters or something like that, where he wants to get you to the point of you're doing something that you don't want to do, that you don't like, but yet they do it all the time.
Yeah. That's probably in there. It sounds very Screwtape-y. But... he says, this is also, I think this is a good thing for us to end our conversation with. He says, I doubt if a jealous and conscientious use of time can ever become a habit. I suspect time is a thing which has to be watched all through life.
Yeah, and I think this is what focus is, right? So for me, focus is saying no. Focus is more of a negative. Focus is saying no to so many things,
right?
So that I can say yes to the thing that I'm focused on, that I'm supposed to be focused. Priorities. Focus is priorities. Like being able to have priorities. Like, what is a strategy? Strategy is being able to take priorities and make it a, and differentiate what is the most important. Then what you do is, once you take a strategy and you say these are the list of priorities that I have to get done. This is the top one. Okay, then what do they say? Okay, now I need you to focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then how do you...
Which means, yeah, saying no.
Saying no to everything. All the other things on that list that you have to get done, you say no to.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can get this top one done.
Right.
And because our lives are so fragmented and segmented into emails and text messages and Slack channels and ClickUp and Basecamp and all these things that we're having to respond to, and we have voicemails that we have to respond to, like, who uses voicemail anymore anyway? But like all these different things that are like continually grabbing our attention, that we're like, oh, I just got to finish this real quick. Oh, I got to get this done really quick. It's like, no, focus is saying no. I'm not doing any of those things.
Yeah.
Because my strategy is to take this main priority and get it accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something that I've been like really trying to think, you know, like, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago when I asked you, like, what makes a good day? And like, I've been trying to really think about spending time every day thinking about what is strategy? What does that mean? What does it mean to focus? What does it mean to prioritize things? How do I orient my day? How do I put these pieces of the puzzle together to accomplish a greater thing? And what do I have to say no to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, those are just kind of like some of the things that I've really internalized and been chewing and mulling over, because people use these buzzwords all the time, I think. You say like, oh, let's get a marketing strategy put together. Let's get a financial strategy put together.
Well, you got to start with some capital.
You got to, yeah. And it's like, okay, exactly. And so it's like, okay, well, what do you mean by strategy? I mean, like, tell me what you mean by that word. Like, I don't know what you, like,
mm-hmm.
Why don't you say, like, pretend that I'm 5 years old. Like, what do you mean by that?
Right.
And it's like, well, okay, so what do I mean by strategy? Well, I mean that there are priorities. There's a list of priorities to get done. And this is something that you should take into, like, this is something that I'm taking into my spiritual life, right? It's like, okay, what is my strategy to get to heaven? How do I pursue the art of holiness? How do I pursue the virtuous life? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, there are priorities that I have to have and I have to do in order to achieve these things. And then like, okay, well, now I need to focus on these things.
Right.
And I have to start with one. Like, you have to start with one. Like, what is the most important thing in your spiritual life? It's to be in the state of grace.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to focus on remaining in the state of grace at all times. Right?
Yeah. So I think that focus and has a way of making us present. It has a focus has presence to it, right? That, okay, I'm going to be present to this goal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be present to the other goals, right?
Which could be good, which are good goals.
Sure.
Good priorities.
Yeah, if you have good priorities. Because I think that there's a tendency to take this too far about turning it in focus into efficiency and like production.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's not actually not what we're talking about.
No, it can get to the utility. So I've thought about
this as
well.
You should produce. Let me tell you a story. When I first started right out of college, you know, I'm working in an office, and out of my window every day, I used to watch this man eat his lunch under a tree. Every day, this man would go outside, if it wasn't raining, he would just go outside and he would sit under in the shade of this tree. It was like in a parking lot. It was like a little grassy area in the parking lot. It's not like it was out on this gorgeous lawn in a park. You know, it's just, but he would sit in the grass and eat a sandwich under this tree. He wasn't doing anything else. And I think about him sometimes as someone who had presence, right? And it's like, that is also the kind of focus we're talking about. He wasn't wasting time. At his judgment, when those come up, I think he will, I mean, that was a good use of his time. He's eating lunch and he's just going to go sit and he's just going to eat his lunch, Whereas sometimes, you know, I'm trying to like accomplish things, you know, like work, you know, still get stuff done.
Clearly I have earbuds in. I'm listening to an audiobook while I'm eating.
I mean, right. It's just all of these other things as opposed to just, and do I have presence? Do I have focus? Right. You know what I mean? No, I actually, I'm dividing myself because I'm eating lunch and trying to do, so I'm actually losing that presence. Whereas that man kept his focus, his presence. And I think when he goes back into the office, he brings that because he maintained his focus. Mm-hmm. He didn't try, he wasn't trying to divide himself. When he comes back, he's still united. And I think he'll actually have, just on a natural level, the ability to bring that presence back to whatever he's working on.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think that these are just good things for us to think about when it comes to our prayer life as well. So, because we can't divide our day from our prayer life.
That's, you know? Right. So think about that as with prayer life, insofar as pray without ceasing. Well, how do we do that, right? How do we do what St. Paul commands and seems like an impossible task? Well, it actually can happen when we maintain focused on the priorities set in front of us.
It's just one of those, like...
And I feel, again, this whole episode, I feel super exposed because I am so bad at so much of this. And it's like, you want to talk about Adam Minahan's struggles and temptations, and which he has, like, on a day-to-day, you know...
How many shorts did you watch today?
Today, yeah.
I didn't know...
We were talking about this.
I was going to have a number for you.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I just think it's a paradox when it comes to this kind of thing, especially with that focus, you know, what are you doing? Trying to do less actually helps you do more, right? By saying, no, I'm going to just focus on these few things and you actually are much more productive. So anyway, the lessons of the natural world, we can learn a lot from, and how to be efficient and focused on our spiritual life as well. Anything else?
Cheers.
Cheers.
I'm going to try to write a bull this fourth.
Don't die.